Vacha.
Shonaka said.
Shonaka said.
It is
thus.
Abhivyaritam. All that was spoken.
All that was spoken.
Raja.
Raja.
The king.
The king.
Nishamya.
Nishamya.
By hearing.
By hearing.
Varada Rishabaha.
Varada Rishabaha.
Maharaj Pariksit.
Maharaj Pariksit.
Kim.
Kim.
What?
What?
Anyat.
Anyat.
More.
More.
Prishtavan.
Prishtavan.
Did he inquire from him?
Did he inquire from him?
Buyaha.
Buyaha.
Again.
Again.
Vyasakim.
Vyasakim.
Unto the son of Vyasadeva.
Unto the son of Vyasadeva.
Rishim.
Rishim.
One who is well versed.
One who is well versed.
Kavim.
Kavim.
Poetic.
Poetic.
Translation. Shonaka said the son of Vyasadeva, Shila Shukadeva Goswami, was a highly learned sage and was able to describe things in a poetic manner. What did Maharaja Pariksit again inquire from him after hearing all that he had said? So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki. A pure devotee of the Lord automatically develops all godly qualities. And some of the prominent features of those qualities are as follows. He is kind, peaceful, truthful, equal, faultless, magnanimous, mild, clean, non-possessive, a well-wisher to all, satisfied, surrendered to Krishna, without hankering, simple, fixed, self-controlled, a balanced eater, sane, mannerly, prideless, grave, sympathetic, friendly, poetic, expert, and silent. Out of these 26 prominent features of a devotee, as described by Krishnadas Kaviraj in his Chaitanya Charitamrita, the qualification of being poetic is especially mentioned herein in relation to Shukadeva Goswami. The presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam by his recitation is the highest poetic contribution. He was a self-realized learned sage. In other words, he was a poet amongst the sages. So, Shunagu Vacha it yavi yav kam raja isham yavatar shava kimman yap prishtavan muyo avayasa kim prishim kavim. So, Om Gana Tivananda Shah Gananjana Shulakaya Chakshurum Medita Yena Tasmai Shigarve Namaha. So, a little bit about Shukadeva Swami first. Not only was he self-realized, he is a Nityasiddha devotee. And as a Nityasiddha devotee, he is a Shaktavesh avatar. Shaktavesh avatar, well, activities, anyway, it's a token reaction for friending the Vaishnavas. So, one should see like that when something happens. You should think, Tate no kampam susha mikshamana bunjali vatma kritam vipakam ridbhag bhapurvir vidanam namaste jivete yo mukti pade sadaiva. Does anyone know that verse? One should tolerate things that happen to them, understanding that it's a token reaction from the Lord. And not only tolerate, one should go on serving the Lord ridbhag bhapurvir vidanam namaste. Offering to Krishna one's heart, one's words, one's actions. And in this way, one becomes a fit recipient for pure devotional service. So that's how we should take it if someone hands us a flower and we get stuck. Krishna's arrangement, I have to keep giving Bhagavatam class and not cry for my mother. So, that's one thing. So, getting back to the point, Shukadeva Goswami is a Shaktavesh avatar. Wow, that's it. And there's many different types of avatars. I was hearing from Prabhupada about the different types of avatars, but as far as the Shaktavesh avatar, it means someone who is empowered with some specific potency that has been given by the Supreme Lord. Actually, Prabhupada was mentioning this morning that also the holy names, it's interesting, the first time I heard Prabhupada say this, the holy names are Shaktavesh avatar too. And then Prabhupada quoted from the Shikshastika. Anyone know which verse he quoted from the Shikshastika? Nam nam. Nam nam kari bahugam nijasharva shaktish. You've invested all your transcendental potency in the holy names. Interesting. And if you know about Lord Ram's pastimes, Lord Ram showed that the holy name was more powerful than Ram. Those of you from India know this story. How Hanuman was able to defend a devotee by chanting Ram's name and was able to ward off all of Ram's weapons just by chanting his name. Ram Nam Sache. I know they chant that at funerals. So Shukadev Goswami is a Shaktivesh avatar, empowered by the Lord. Not only that, he's a special personality who happens to be the Shuka, the parrot of Srimati Radharani. Mm. You've heard that story before? Anyway, I guess I should tell it. It's an opportunity for me to tell this interesting story that was told to me by Gaur Govinda Maharaj. He said, once upon a time, Lord Shiva was giving Bhagavatam class to his wife, Parvati. And while he was giving Bhagavatam class to his wife, Parvati, Parvati was doing what you, all of you, normally do in Bhagavatam class. What's that? Falling asleep.
No, multitask.
They didn't have mobile phones at that time. There's no information about Parvati with her iPad or anything like that. So she was sleeping. But Shuka, the parrot of Srimati Radharani, was listening to the Bhagavatam class, and he was imitating the sound of Parvati's voice. So every time Lord Shiva said, are you listening? And the parrot said, I can't imitate her voice. But I'm not going to even try. I can imitate a parrot, but he didn't sound like a parrot. He sounded like Parvati. So he said, yes, wonderful. In a female voice, obviously. And so Lord Shiva went on giving Bhagavatam class. Some of you may have heard this story before. And then he looked up and he saw that this parrot was imitating his wife. And he got very angry. He started chasing the parrot. It's a little esoteric story. And then the parrot flew away from Lord Shiva. Same time, Srila Vyasadeva was giving the class to his wife. And Srila Vyasadeva's wife, she was attentive, unlike most devotees. And she had her mouth open, and guess what? The parrot went in. Now, this is an esoteric story. I mean, sometimes these stories are told to illustrate the Siddhanta. You know, sometimes, you understand what I mean? To illustrate the Siddhanta, and they're not always meant to be taken literally. Because in the Vedic literatures, the important thing when you're presenting information is Siddhanta and Bhav. Siddhanta means perfect conclusion. Anta means end, or you know, and Siddha means perfection. I mean, the end of perfection doesn't mean you're finished with perfection. It means the conclusion of all perfection. Does everybody understand what the word Siddhanta means?
Yeah.
Like, Siddhanta means things like
proper philosophical understanding.
Conclusive, ultimate philosophical understanding. Not just philosophical understanding. You know, I have some philosophical understanding like the sky is blue or something like that. And that's not a Siddhanta. But it means ultimate nasato vijite bhavo nabhavo vijite sataha ubiyarapi drishtavantas tvaniyas tadvadarshapi. In other words, those things which continue to exist, truths, and sometimes you have the word tattva. The word tattva means that which is. In other words, something that is always true. Like, we talked about yesterday, Sambandha Gyan in class. Mm-hmm. It's like tattva, you know, Vishnu tattva, Shiva tattva. Just like yesterday someone asked me a question about Pancha tattva. You know, the five categories. Basically, it's categories. You know, we use the word truths, but it's actually five different categories. And Of course, two of them are variations of the same category. You understand? Like you have Lord Chaitanya is Vishnu Tattva, but he's the original personality of Godhead, full of all six attributes, 64 qualities, just like Krishna has 64 qualities. And then you have Lord Nityananda, who's an expansion. So he's also Vishnu Tattva, but he's a different category within the category. You understand? Expansion of Krishna. And then you have, after that, you have a Dvaitacharya, who's an expansion, a portion of a planetary portion. Mahavishnu, also Sadashiva. And then you have, of course, Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, who is Shakti Tattva. And then after that, you have Jiva Tattva, Shiva's Tattva. So this is a Tattva. So anyway, so sometimes these stories are told to illustrate the Tattva rather than being taken literally. Does everybody understand that point? So anyway. So Shukadeva Goswami, in any case, is the parrot of Srimati Radharani, and he illustrated a specific pastime of being absorbed in Brahman while he was within the womb of his mother. And because he was absorbed in Brahman, that's called a Brahma body, not a Maya body. Difference between them. A Brahma body means someone is absorbed in Brahman, taking Brahman as the absolute truth, but they're not criticizing the personality of Godhead. In fact, it's more or less like agnostic. You understand? Agnostic. Mm-hmm. Agnostic means you just don't know. You know, I'm not going to criticize. Atheist is like my good friend Richard Dawkins, mm-hmm. who's just like dedicated life and soul mm-hmm. to trying to prove to people that no God, that God doesn't exist, which is impossible because you can't prove a negative anyway.
You can't prove what?
A negative. I mean, if you say to me, prove that there's no blue-eyed unicorn, I can't prove that. I can say that I have not seen one, but I can't prove that there's no such thing as a blue-eyed unicorn somewhere in the forest here in New Taliban. There might be. So I can't prove a negative. I can prove a positive if it exists. I mean, I can prove that there are I can prove that there are cows here, right? Mm-hmm. That's pretty easy.
Yeah.
I mean, just like this morning, I was taking a Joppa walk, and I was hearing someone yelling at the cows.
But can you prove God exists?
Yes, you can prove God exists. There's different proofs. I don't know if we want to get into it in this. Mm-hmm. You can use information technology to prove there's a designer, which is the name for God, the ultimate designer. I have several presentations where you can prove that God exists. And also we can prove by the process of bhakti yoga. Prachaksha bhagavam daryam shushukam kartam avyam. 9th chapter of Gita, right? Raja Guyam. So there's different proofs, but you can't prove it now. You can't prove that something doesn't exist. I mean, let's say I'm talking to a Christian, and the Christian says the devil is there. I cannot prove the devil doesn't exist. Unless, I mean, I cannot do Shastric proof. You know, if in the Shastra it says the devil doesn't exist, but it doesn't say in the Shastra the devil doesn't exist. That's, ultimately, that's our source or a epistemological understanding. That means how do you know what you know. That's our source of knowledge, is Shastra. Because Shastra is not imperfect like everything else, like our senses. But using mundane means of acquiring knowledge, you can't prove a negative.
And that's an axiomatic truth.
That's
accepted.
Yeah, because you have to be omniscient to prove a negative. Mm-hmm. If something doesn't exist. You have to be absolutely omniscient. Mm. You know, prove to me, yeah, there's no blue-eyed unicorn with blonde hair. You can't. You can't prove to me there's no God. They can't do that. So anyway, so Richard Dawkins and others are so highly dedicated to trying to prove that there's no God, that they are more God-conscious than I will ever be in this lifetime.
Well, he doesn't have a lifetime anymore, does he?
Richard Dawkins? He's still alive.
Yeah.
Not Richard Dawkins. You're talking about Stephen Hawking. Richard Dawkins is still alive.
He's still around.
Yeah, he's just waiting to see the Amadutas. They're coming to take me away, away. They're coming to take me away, like that song goes. So, anyway, so he's dedicated to try to prove there's no God, but you can't really do that, and he's completely Krishna conscious in doing that. Like Kamsa. Kamsa was absorbed in Lord Vishnu. I mean, he knew that Lord Vishnu had killed him in his previous life, you know, Kalanemi. And he was just thinking, oh my God, he's coming to get me again. And so, I mean, even Krishna sent some interesting signs that he would look in the mirror and not see himself. So if you look in the mirror and don't see yourself, get ready to chant Hare Krishna and die. Or he had this dream or something like that with jackals or something like that. And don't worry about that. Devotees won't have it. So, get back to Sukadeva Goswami. He was a Brahmavadi, not a Mayavadi, not criticizing God. He wasn't offensive, but this is his pastime in the womb of his mother. And his mother was pretty pregnant, 16 years pregnant. That's a very late pregnancy. And I guess in those days they didn't have any C-section. Right, so anyway, so finally he heard Krishna Katha. Krishna even had to speak to him, his father spoke to him. And what Sukadeva Goswami did, he showed himself. One of the qualities you know, mentioned here is a detached self-control. He showed that he wasn't really interested in having any sort of parental affection. He left home immediately after birth. And it's described that his father, who was running after him, and crying, oh my son, it's described only the trees and the mountains would echo, would respond to his plaintive cry. Then Sukadeva Goswami used his mystic power to create a duplicate Sukadeva. Prabhupada describes this. And a duplicate Sukadeva, so his father would take home someone and his father wouldn't harass him. That reminds me of Madhvacharya's pastimes. Madhvacharya wanted to take sannyas like when he was like 7 years old. And his parents said, no. His guru was very intelligent because his guru kept feeding the little kid sweets. And when you feed a little kid sweets, you sort of addict him. And he just wanted to leave and to go with his guru. Not because of the sweets, but because he was a pure devotee. He was Vayuputra. And then... The son of Vayu,
okay.
Like Hanuman and Bhimsen. So he basically he left. He wanted to take sannyas. His parents wouldn't let him. Then he made a deal with his parents. He said, "Dad, if your wife, my mother, can have another son, can I take sannyas?" And she was quite old. And the father said, "Yeah, of course." And so she had a son. And then at 9 years of age, he just left. So in other words, he needed to arrange through his mystic power for his mother to have a son.
Wow.
So he could take sannyas, so the mother would harass him. But when Prabhupada was trying to get some help in India before he came to the United States, he asked many families to supply one son. And the families had many sons. He said, just give me one son. None of them did that.
He even put an ad in the newspaper, didn't he?
Yeah, he put an ad in the newspaper. Just one of your children. People are so attached to children. And also, at that time, it was considered disreputable, an embarrassment to have your child become a brahmachari. Because it was considered, you know, they're like street urchins, beggars, like that. And even to this day, in certain parts of India, we don't really make brahmacharis like in Gujarat. Because they want to keep all the kids there. So, anyway, Sukadeva Goswami, as soon as he produced the imitation Shuka, and actually that imitation Shuka is part of the family tree that you'll find described in the Bhagavatam. Shuka, and Prabhupada describes, it's not the same Sukadeva Goswami, but Ashoka, who was created by Shukadeva Goswami with his mystic powers. And so then Shukadeva Goswami went back to his father and learned Bhagavatam from him. So it's not that he just left and ran to preach to Maharaj Parikshit, but he went back and had a Bhagavatam class, you know, Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhava, Bhakti Vedanta, Bhakti Sarvabhoma. And then he went to preach to Maharaj Parikshit. So anyway, so Shukadeva Goswami, reiterating, is a Nityasiddha devotee, Shaktavesh avatar, eternal associate of Krishna, parrot of Srimati Radharani. And he was exhibiting these qualities that are mentioned here by Srila Prabhupada in the Bhagavatam. It says, Yasyasti Bhakti Bhagavacha Kinshana Savaragunastatra Samasate Sura Ravabhaktasya Kato Mahakuna Mano Ritenasati Davato Bihi. This is a verse that Prabhupada quoted quite often. That one, Yashasti Bhakti Bhagavat, one who has devotion for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all the saintly qualities, the divine qualities, become automatically manifest in one. And one who, this is, and the second part of that verse is actually a little controversial. One who has no devotion, Manorite Nasati Dabatobahi, his good qualities are simply on the mental platform. Now, that's something that needs to be explained. Because if you say that someone who is not a devotee or someone who has no devotion to God has no good qualities, someone will say, well, I've just seen my mother. My mother is very kind, peaceful, truthful, faultless, magnanimous. You know, or some charitable person, let's take Bill Gates, for example, who's made so much money and has given most of it to charity, he's not going to leave anything to his kids. Practically nothing to his kids. Because when you leave money to your kids, you ruin their lives. It's probably one of the worst things you can do. I mean, you can leave $10 to them. My father passed away and he just left me a gun. I wasn't sure what that was. I was supposed to do with it. Wasn't sure what I was supposed to do with it. I was thinking, you know, he's rich, he's going to leave me a lot, but anyway. Sounds like something out of New Talmud. So anyways.
Maybe he knew you were going to have to come here.
So anyway, so you may say that someone has, yeah, I see so many of these good qualities in someone. So how do you say they have no good qualities or they're not manifesting good? Well, that's explained by this statement in the verse, Mano Rite Nasati Dabato Bihi. That their good qualities are mano tena, in the chariot of the mind, literally, that's what the Sanskrit says. In other words, their good qualities are coming because there are some particular modes of nature, mode of goodness, that happens to be affecting them at a particular juncture. Now, we find described in the Gita that the modes of nature are in constant flux. The Gita describes that sometimes the mode of goodness is prominent, defeating the mode of passion and ignorance, sometimes passion is prominent, defeating goodness and ignorance, and you know, you get the idea. So, everything's in flux in this world. Everything is in motion. One Greek pre-Socratic philosopher said you can't step into the same river twice because the river is flowing. And you know, you don't have the same body today that you had yesterday. Hey, it looks a little different, but it's basically changing all the time. The cells are dividing, everything like that. And this interesting app that you can get to age yourself on the phone, you know, it's very popular now. You know, people look at it, what they're going to look like. What?
I just heard that after, so then I was looking it up last night, and they're warning people not to use that app.
Yeah, because
the Russians
take all your information. Right. I have no information to give the Russians, so it's all right.
But they own the rights to your image.
That's fine. Let them chant Hare Krishna.
They can see the devotee.
Yeah, they see the devotee. I think, let them put me everywhere. So, so the material world is always in flux, and also, we're always in flux as far if we're not Krishna conscious. because we're affected by the modes of nature. And that's Bhagavatam says that, you know, that everyone is forced to act, and Bhagavad Gita, sorry, everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the impulses born of the modes of material nature. No one can refrain from action for a moment. So that's a problem. So yes, for some time we can exhibit these qualities, and then the modes of nature will influence us to be in different ways. So in other words, these are not qualities being manifest from the soul, and qualities being manifest from the modes of nature. Even you find with Ravan or some of these demons, they had certain good qualities. Ravan, for example, he was an expert Sanskrit chanter. He was not just a Rakshasa, he was a Brahman Rakshasa, because he had a Brahman father and a Rakshasini mother. So he had some, he had many good qualities. He was charitable. I mean, Jarasandha was charitable to the Brahmins, wasn't he?
Yeah.
That's why Krishna, Arjuna, and Bhimsen went to see him dressed as Brahmins, because he was extremely charitable. He would give whatever Brahmins wanted. Karna was extremely charitable, wasn't he? In fact, you know, he gave up his vest and his earrings that protected him.
And
he's loyal. I mean, many good qualities.
Arun Kasipu gave a really good explanation of that to the lamenting wives of his
brother. Aranyaksha,
yeah.
Yeah,
it was really nice.
Yeah, it was perfect philosophy. I mean, you knew the Siddhanta perfectly.
Yeah.
Part of the Siddhanta perfectly. Mm-hmm. So, so we don't want to get confused if we see someone exhibiting these qualities and say, wow, he must be a great devotee. Because the qualities don't necessarily indicate that someone is a great devotee. These qualities are actually qualities manifested by a devotee, but coming from the actual devotion of the devotee. And they're also, as far as the category is concerned, they're called gona qualities. There's mukya and gona qualities. Has anyone heard this before?
No,
I haven't. Yes.
Mukya, what? No, mukya means the direct qualities. What is the original quality of a devotee? Does anyone know?
Original
servant to devotion. Yes, sir. The original quality of a devotee is that he's devoted to Krishna. Nyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma navratam anukulyena Krishna nishilanam bhakti uttamam. That's described by Srila Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Yoga Sadhana Sindhu. That he's devoid of any personal desire, you know, jnana, liberation, or enjoyment in this material world, gross enjoyment. And then he's serving Krishna enthusiastically, actively, and with a sense of devotion. So that's the mukya quality. That quality is always there. Now, gona means the secondary qualities. So these are listed as secondary qualities. I mean, for example, let's take one here. In other words, they may not always be shown all the time with the devotee. I mean, let's say, take friendly, for example. I mean, I've heard a Prabhupada get really angry at people and not so friendly. Right? I mean, he said about some atheistic scientists, you know, basically you kick on their face or something with boots. Is that a friendly expression? Woo! But that essentially he is friendly. I mean, deep down, that's for the benefit of the person. Obviously, I wouldn't mind probably kicking on my face, kicking on my head. I mean, that would be ecstasy. Like Sivananda is saying, you know that story of the Chaitanya Charitamrita?
Mm-hmm.
Where Lord Nityananda kicked him. You know the story or no?
Yeah.
Lord Nityananda was hungry. And Sivananda Sen was taking care of all the devotees, and Lord Nityananda, he actually even cursed Sivananda Sen's children to die. And he went up to Sivananda Sen when Sivananda Sen showed up, and he kicked Sivananda Sen. And Sivananda Sen didn't say, well, that's not a Vaishnava quality. He was in ecstasy. Thank you for kicking me. So anyway, so these qualities are there part of the constitution because they're secondary of the devotee, but sometimes they may be manifest, sometimes they may not. I mean, grave, for example, sometimes the devotee may be telling jokes and laughing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can go through some of these. You know, and actually, there's ways to explain them, too. I mean, I don't have time to go through all the qualities, but, you know, kind, whatever the pure devotee does, even if it appears unkind, like if he kicks you, that's kindness. Just like whatever Krishna does, in the Bhagavatam, Krishna is accused of being partial. But Krishna is not partial. Whatever he does, even the killing of the demons, liberates the demons. And then you have peaceful, you know, sometimes apparently a devotee is not peaceful when he gets angry. But internally he's peaceful. So, that, you know, there's ways to explain these things. The apparent contradiction. But at least sometimes to our vision, we may not see all those qualities in a person. And that does not mean that they are not pure devotees of the Lord. Because these are guna qualities. These are secondary qualities that are manifest by the person's nature. But according to the circumstance, the pure devotee may or may not manifest them at that particular juncture. Does everybody understand that?
Yeah.
You know, just like sometimes people would criticize Prabhupada when he got angry. Mm-hmm. And they would say, oh, he couldn't be very spiritual when he's getting angry. But anger is there. And sometimes people would criticize Lord Chaitanya, says balanced eater, for eating too much. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he had a son-in-law named Amoga. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was feeding Lord Chaitanya, and Amoga said, like, this sannyasi is eating as much for 10 men. And of course, Lord Chaitanya is a balanced eater because he can eat the whole universe. There's no problem. As the universal form, he's swallowing everything and devouring everyone. But anyway, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's son-in-law, Amoga, said that, and then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya went to beat up his son-in-law. And he ran after his son-in-law and couldn't catch because his son-in-law was actually younger. And then his son-in-law got cholera. Mm. And he almost died, and then Lord Chaitanya had to save him. There's a story of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, putting his hand on his chest and saying, this is not a quality of a devotee or a Brahmin who's non-envious, and then Amoga actually slapped himself. He said, with his mouth, I have actually criticized the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So anyway, these qualities are important. We talk about them quite often. And in order to develop these qualities ourselves, we have to become Krishna conscious. There's no other way to do it. Otherwise, it's manoharitainasati. Davato Bihi, it's just simply on the mental platform. If you try to become self-controlled, a balanced eater, sane, mannerly, prideless, without Krishna consciousness, it won't be stable, it won't be steady. So these are some of the points. I'm sure I brought up some controversial subject matters. Anyone have any questions? Yes.
What happened to the parrot? It went into the mouth of...
It's an esoteric story. And that's how she became pregnant, according to Govinda Maharaj. As I said, that's an esoteric story illustrating the Siddhanta. I personally don't take the story as literal. Mm-hmm. I take it as a figurative story to illustrate that he's the parrot of Srimati Radharani. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, usually ladies don't get pregnant by having birds fly into their mouth. You know, that usually if something flies into your mouth, it goes into your stomach and then intestines. So, but you know, it could happen like that. Krishna could arrange anything.
Yeah, celestial worlds.
Yeah, I mean, Krishna could arrange anything. I mean, these are living entities with spiritual bodies. But I'm not taking it as something that I recite as the absolute truth, because I didn't hear it from Prabhupada. And I don't have any shastric reference to it. It's important to have shastric references. Like if you go to Vrindavan, you'll find people saying, this is where Krishna did this, this is where Krishna did that, and you ask them, where's that in the shastra? Well, it's just what I heard from the villagers. Yeah.
Could you explain a little bit more about, because you're saying these qualities, they come from the soul, but they may not always manifest.
Yes.
They come from the mind, and they're changing.
Yeah.
How would we know the difference seeing? Because it both seems to be coming.
Because we look for the mukya quality.
Which is devotion.
Yeah, pure devotion. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, let's say, here's a Shaktivesha avatar who's a pure devotee of the Lord. I'm going to give you an example. Parashuram. Woo! Yeah, I'm not going to say he had an anger issue. That would be an offense. But he really did get angry. And he wiped out the Kshatriyas. There were rivers or lakes of blood. Because his father was killed by Kartavirya Arjuna. And the sons of Kartavirya Arjuna, actually. And so, wow. Looking at it externally, I mean, it's hard to see all those 26 qualities manifest in Parashuram, isn't it? But they're there, but sometimes they're manifest. A devotee out of service will sometimes, like, fight in the battle, Kurukshetra. And then certain times you don't manifest those qualities when you're in the battle of Kurukshetra. It won't be so good. I mean, for example, you have Yudhisthira Maharaj, who is manifesting a quality of honesty on the battle of Kurukshetra, during the battle of Kurukshetra, but it wasn't appropriate. When he was asked by Krishna to say that Ashwatthama has died, he said, no. I have this good quality of honesty, and I refuse to do it, Krishna. And Krishna had to make that trick with Bhimsen killing the elephant named Ashwatthama. You know that story. So, basically, and so then Yudhisthira, he actually did lie, because he said, Ashwatthama, the elephant, is dead. So he was lying, ultimately, because he was giving the wrong impression. Lying doesn't mean only what you say, but if you say a truthful thing in the wrong way or the way that give the wrong impression, that's also lying. Mm-hmm. You can't just define lying by the words. It's also the intention. And because of that, Prabhupada said he had to touch the earth. Before that, he never touched the earth. Mm. And of course, Prabhupada said the atheists say, well, he touched the earth because he lied. And the theists say he touched the earth because he didn't obey Krishna's instructions. Mm. Mm. I mean, Arjuna wanted to be peaceful too in the beginning of the Gita. And Krishna said, no, how come these impurities have overcome you? So, anyway, these qualities, because one's a pure devotee, these qualities are there in the heart, but because of service, the pure devotee may or may not manifest them at a particular point in time. Does that make sense? But the quality of mukya quality is always manifest. He's always completely devoted to Krishna. Unless there's a pastime, like growing up, you know, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur's pastimes when he was young. When he grew up, or Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was young, he would accost the devotees. He would challenge them and say, and defeat them philosophically. And the devotees would pray, please let this demon punk become a devotee. If he ever becomes a devotee, he'd be a great preacher. Little did they know. So sometimes out of pastimes, you know, like Lord Chaitanya, you know, obviously Lord Chaitanya he's Krishna, but he's exhibiting passion of being a pure devotee, but we could not say that he was always exhibiting the pastime of being prideless when he was young. Actually, he was called, oh, Crest Jewel of the Arrogant. Srivast Thakur said that to him. Oh, Crest Jewel of the Arrogant.
Shiromani, and then what, do you know the word?
No, I don't know the Arrogant. Manina, or something like that. But anyway, that's a direct quote. He would Srivast Thakur. So Lord Chaitanya exhibited himself as being prideful.
Medhara was always very upset that he didn't have bhakti, didn't seem to have any bhakti.
Yeah, he was very upset because he loved Lord Chaitanya. And then, one time Lord Chaitanya, this is a story that one time Sachimata asked Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya asked Sachimata to get something for his worship. And Sachimata said, I'll get it very soon, quickly, but not right away. And Lord Chaitanya got so angry, he just tore apart the house. Smashed all the jars or whatever, cooking substances. And finally he went unconscious in a fit, And that story is, I think it was a Chaitanya Bhagavat. Anyone's heard that story before?
Yes.
Very interesting story. And then Sachimata said to him, hey, you destroyed everything that belongs to you. What are you going to do about this? We don't have much money. So he goes out and he comes back with a bunch of gold.
Yeah.
So if you have a kid like that, it's pretty good. So that's definitely not grave or prideless or sane. So for pastime's sake, sometimes these things are not manifested.
There was a man that would go on walks with Prabhupada and Juru, and he was criticizing Prabhupada because he was always criticizing my life.
Yeah.
And Prabhupada said, well, I have to train my disciples on how to preach.
Yeah. That man was a doctor. I forget his name, maybe.
Yeah. Then they started,
Dr.
Patel,
what is Patel? No, there was another doctor. It was a different name. But anyway, yeah, we'd always smash the guy.
Right.
But he was a friend with Prabhupada.
Mm-hmm.
Prabhupada would sometimes get really angry about nonsense.
There was one time in Nimrodhavan, and there was a tape of it, but I haven't been able to find it. I'm curious about it. One devotee asked him, they were having a discussion about Bhagavad Gita, and the devotee asked, said something about, Vivashwan or how long ago it was spoken about the Gita, and Prabhupada just laid into it. And, I don't know if you remember this, but devotees like Krishna Dumyan and were trying to, defend him from Prabhupada's
anger.
They couldn't understand why he got so angry at that moment.
Hmm.
And I asked the devotee privately later. He said, I know why.
Why?
He wouldn't tell.
Oh, wouldn't tell you.
He said, I know why. Prabhupada knows.
It was a challenging question. And then there was that whole Gopi Baba Club in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And Prabhupada became livid. Just really angry at them. And then there was a... Anyway, one of Prabhupada's ex-disciples who asked Prabhupada, what is my duty in life? You're my spiritual master. Prabhupada said, you have no spiritual master. Your duty is to enjoy the material world.
Go out and enjoy.
Go out and enjoy the material world.
Yes.
So that's heavy. But it's also out of compassion.
Right.
A pure devotee, like Krishna killing someone, a pure devotee chastising someone is out of compassion. It's not out of meanness. So internally, all these qualities are there, although externally it may appear to be something different. So the main point I want to make is the way to judge is by someone's devotion to Krishna. That's mukhya. It's very important to understand that distinction between mukhya and gona, or else you can become confused by the secondary qualities, or the non-manifestation of the secondary qualities.
May I ask a question about the Saptavesh Avatar?
Yeah.
Okay. My understanding, and maybe there's different categories of Shaktivis. My understanding was, the Shaktivis Sarvatar, like say, Parikit Maharaj, is the administrative energy of the Lord.
Yes.
There are certain energies where, here you mention about the, you know, in the Shashastika, how, you know, I invested all of my energies within these holy names.
Yeah.
My understanding was that the holy name is actually Krishna.
Oh, is it actually Krishna?
But so is it? But that with Shaktivesh to me seems like a lesser category than the full, like say, the deity form of the Lord.
That's what I thought too until I heard Prabhupada say that this morning.
Hmm.
I mean, that was what I thought that. But when Prabhupada said the holy name is Shaktivesh.
Is that because it's in, he's manifesting in the material world, the holy name?
No, the holy name manifests in the spiritual world too. But now, Avesh doesn't mean that it's manifesting in the material. That would be avatar. Hmm. Avatar means to descend, to come down.
Hmm.
So, and it means also nama avatar, because when the holy name descends here. But I never thought, I thought previously, to hearing this class by Prabhupada, that Shaktivesh meant it like a jiva soul that was given some particular potency by the Lord. But then we have Sarva Shakti. You know, in other words, the holy name has all the potency of the Lord and is the Lord too.
Hmm.
And also we can understand, here's another point, you know, I'm just thinking about this because this is something I just heard this morning. Because as I told the Lord, I listen to a class of Prabhupada every morning while I'm doing my Didi Puja. So really, it's really enlivening for me to do this. So another point of, I was going to say something about Sarvashakti potency. Yeah, okay, here's it. Because the holy name has to descend in order to be potent. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said the holy name is not simply the movement of the lips and the tongue. Prabhupada said it has to be heard from the lips of the pure devotee. So, you know, there's sort of an empowerment type of thing there too. That we heard the holy name. I mean, for example, I first heard the holy name on the radio. On the radio. And it was Prabhupada. Yeah, I was listening. Yeah, it was the New York radio station or something like that. And they put the Happening album on. And I didn't know. I was just listening for some mundane songs like Chubby Checkers and The Twist or something. Some of you may not know what I was talking about. I'm talking about. But I was just listening for some mundane songs, and all of a sudden there was Hare Krishna, you know, Prabhupada. I'm not going to imitate him.
Yeah.
And my life, you know, hit me in the heart, Bhavanti Ritkarna Rasayana Kata. Went from my ear to my heart. And I lost all sorts of interest in everything I was doing at that point. You know, just like, I was going to the university, and right after hearing that, I said, what the hell am I doing? And I had no more impetus to continue my studies. My God, like Prabhupada said, the poison has entered. And then I kept listening. I just like was so struck with the holy name that I kept listening over and over and over and over so I could record it on my tape recorder, you know, big reel-to-reel tape recorder. Finally, they played it again. And I just played it over and over again, and then here I am. So, that proves that the holy name can be transmitted through a recording. You know, some people say, no, it's not potent, but it's Prabhupada recording. Prabhupada used recordings to give people Gayatri mantras. I know some people criticized Prabhupada and said it's not bona fide, the holy name. But by the pure devotee can empower the tape recorder or MP3 player or whatever. And I find listening to Prabhupada on my MP3 player just as potent as when I was sitting with Prabhupada 5,000 years ago. During the battle of Kurukshetra. No. Yeah.
Isn't there also a kind of Shaktivesh avatar that's actually Vishnu Tattva but very specific?
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes Vishnu Tattva is, and sometimes Vishnu Tattvas could be Manvantara avatars, sometimes Vishnu Tattvas could be Yuga avatars. You know, and sometimes you can have a Yuga avatar that's not Vishnu Tattva, you know.
So then the holy name is Vishnu Tattva, but it can be a Shakti Vaishnava, yeah. Specifically empowered.
Yeah, specifically empowered to do something that Krishna ordinarily doesn't do. Dinahini Atachilo Haninam Udarila. But anyway, I mean, Prabhupada said it, so I accept it as the truth. You know, I never thought the holy name would be described like that before, but since Prabhupada said it, yeah, it's good as gold.
And Prabhupada also empowered his disciples sometimes when he had large initiations. The initiation, I was
part of. Chant on the beach, yeah.
Chant on the beach while he was sitting there.
Yeah. Yeah, Prabhupada could empower people, you know, certainly could empower a radio or. Anyway, I experienced that on the radio. It was potent. And that's why Prabhupada said, must be heard from the lips of a pure devotee. And, you know, people listen to other people chanting. I'm not talking about devotees, like non-devotees chanting. People, some of the most famous chanters aren't even vegetarians. Yeah. Anyway, don't mention names. But they're not even vegetarians, and the devotees like to listen to them over. They're not getting devotional service. They're getting milk touched by the lips of a serpent. Avaishnava mokod girnam bhutam harikatam ritam shravana naiva kartavyam sharpo chisti yatapi. That's from the Hari Bhakti Shudaya by Sanatana Goswami. He says, one who hears about Krishna from someone who is not Krishna conscious, then it's like taking milk touched by the lips of a serpent.
Would that be like listening to Sting singing Hare Krishna?
I don't know Sting's personal behavior or characteristics. It's hard for me to say. Maybe he's... I mean, Prabhupada did empower George Harrison. George Harrison was a vegetarian, at least. And he did believe in Krishna. So, I mean, it's difficult to ascertain, but there are people who are eating meat who don't believe in Krishna, who are chanting Hare Krishna, very popular. I'm not giving an example, all right?
Well, I mean, there's people eating meat that do believe in Krishna, but they may not be pure devotees.
Yeah, let me give you an example. This is a New Orleans example. Once upon a time in New Orleans, we had a fundraiser with a very famous kirtan person. Don't mention. Wasn't Krishna. I don't mention Hare Krishna. And it turns out that his band and everybody, they just wanted to get drunk afterwards. There was some meat eating too, you know. So I'm just wondering. I mean, it may be good for raising money. What is it? Money purifies everything. I just made that up. That's not a quote from Shastra. believe me. So it may be good for raising money, but I don't know, you know. I think we have to... I mean, Prabhupada, I was with Prabhupada one time in Mayapur, and they invited all these professional kirtan people there, and there was a kirtan competition. And some of the people were really good. They could get the drum to chant Hare Krishna. I remember that. They actually had the drum go, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Hare, Ram 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 Ram, Hare Hare. And they go, wow, Hare Bol. You know, and they were really good at kirtan. I mean, the dancing, I mean, it was just like, wow. And Prabhupada stopped the whole thing. He said it's nonsense. They were going to have prizes for who could do the best kirtans. Mm. You were there?
Yeah, I won third place.
Oh, that was you on stage dancing.
No, what he was like, it was especially in one night, there was some, and I remember this one Madhaji, she was like be chanting and then weeping. Like, you know, sobbing and weeping. And then Prabhupada said, this is sobbing. Stop it now.
Yeah, we probably stopped the whole competition. Another time, we were in Prabhupada's room, and then someone was leading kirtan and choking on the microphone. And it was just like really loud. And Prabhupada said, he thinks it sounds beautiful, but he sounds like a monster or something like that. And one point during that year, Prabhupada took away the microphones from the leaders in the of the kirtan. He said, no more amplification in kirtan. And that's kind of hard because you got thousands of devotees there. Yeah. And you know, how can you lead kirtan with a microphone? But then Prabhupada let us have it back. Mm. But, I mean, those were ecstatic years. I mean, Prabhupada circumambulating the deities there. And you've all seen videos of it, or been there.
Ringing
the bells, he went around, we were all dancing around Prabhupada. I mean, it was pretty wonderful.
That's the year that he really started, at the end of that festival, started really getting sick.
Yeah.
Then he came down one more time. He did one more little dance. He could barely walk. It was really, it blazing in my mind.
Yeah, that was a difficult year. And that year, he put down the cornerstone for the Temple of Vedic Planetarium.
Hmm.
I was with him when he did that. And incidentally, it's in the same place where the TOVP is now.
Wow.
Although later on, the devotees wanted to put it out in the field, but they couldn't do that for legal reasons, because there's a limit of ISKCON land. You know, there's a 24-acre limit to what ISKCON can control. And so it's actually in the same spot, probably, put the Anantashesha to the ground.
How could it have been different?
What?
I mean, why do you say incidentally? How could it have been different if Prabhupada had scattered?
No, but the devotees thought it was too close. Oh. As many devotees say right now. Mm. It was too close, and we didn't really own the existing the properties we have now. Mm. So they wanted to landscape it a little bit differently. And Prabhupada did allow that. I mean, Prabhupada picked a particular design in the TOVP, and then he went through a whole bunch of different designs. And incidentally, Prabhupada said he wanted it to look like the United States Congress in one point. And then devotees got upset later on after Prabhupada left when they designed it, the United States Congress building. Anyway, yeah.
In Shyamasundara's new book, which is pretty much all about him first going to India in those first 2 years in India, he describes those three corner-laying ceremonies, which all took place in a month. Mayapur first, then I think Krishna Balaram, and then Bombay. All within like a month or 6 weeks, Prabhupada laid all those cornerstones.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure if that was the cornerstone for the TOVP or for the...
Well, like you just described, he was laying a
Well, it was for the TOVP. That was after the other buildings were built already, or...
No, it was before anything was done almost.
No, that was different. See, Prabhupada laid the cornerstone for the existing buildings, I mean, the original buildings, the corner. And then later on, after they were built, this was in 1975 or so, or 76. It might be 76 or 77. That Prabhupada, yeah, I don't remember, so many years ago, the Prabhupada... He actually laid cornerstones several times for the TOVP in different places.
Several times. Yeah, this was early. This was 72.
Yeah, this was, but this is much later.
And changing his mind?
No. Yeah, devotees came up with different ideas. And, I mean, if we had had the property all in ISKCON's name, probably the TOVP would have been some distance away from the existing buildings. Right now it's really close.
When Ambarish came to New Orleans earlier this year, he described all that, how it all ended up there, and how he took it as Srila Prabhupada's mercy.
Yeah, because it was the original spot that Prabhupada put the cornerstone in. But we couldn't do it anywhere else because of the what's called the Land Sealing Act in Bengal.
Hmm.
Now, right now, the government is giving us permission to have more land. But previously, one organization couldn't own more than about 24 acres of land.
But the Communist Party is no longer ruling, right?
No. No, I mean, the government is very favorable to us. Mamata Banerjee, I was there. I was there, Mamata Banerjee flew in her helicopter and went before the deities and offered to Radhamadava and Panchatattva. I mean, she's... I mean, I don't know if she's a devotee, but she, you know, she really showed a lot of devotion. And she pushed her whole cabinet to approve ISKCON being like a... allowed to have more land as a tourist attraction. It was really nice. Okay? I think we have to end now because we have a Sunday program. And today we'll speak about Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who is a very important personality. Okay, all glorious to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.